Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. I'm Caroline Herman. I'm delighted to be moderating this panel on regulatory business and investor drivers for sustainability in the wine sector. Our topic is going to take a closer look at the interplay of larger wine retailers and wine companies that oftentimes have the knowledge and financial resources to tackle climate change, and the smaller producers that may also have a good bit of knowledge, but may not have necessarily the resources. And as we heard from the prior panel, you know, we're all dependent on each other, and it's really the smaller suppliers that are also going to help the larger retailers to meet their climate change goals. And so I think this panel is very interesting because we come at it from a number of different resources and perspectives. We've got Stephanie, who will be talking to the opportunities and challenges of smaller producers in Australia and Victoria. Marcus will speak to very large System Blogget work that they're doing. Andrew is with the largest UK importer and works with a whole range of suppliers as well as channels. And Greg has a lot of very specific insight into agriculture and wine tech. And so I think everyone's going to be touching on these different drivers and how they affect, the elements of the supply chain that they work with. And I really come at this from the regulatory perspective. And in my experience, businesses have really just been focused so much on the bottom line or net earnings. In the regulatory sense, I've seen them when they have not been accounting for efficiencies or externalities, you know, things that cause harm, emitting greenhouse gas emissions into the atmosphere beyond regulatory levels. Why haven't we been recovering our emissions or our effluents? Well, it costs money and it doesn't bring in revenue, but eventually those companies that get caught will get sued, and it'll cost them in terms of penalties, fines, damage to reputation, sometimes share price reduction. But I think we're now at the point where, we're seeing the carbon and waste impact on the environment. We're seeing more regulators requiring larger companies to account for their entire supply chain, including carbon and waste impacts to their supplier, and hopefully seeing some opportunities for tax incentives. We're seeing consumers demanding companies to be more accountable for their business decisions, whether it's through fair trade practices, providing safe working conditions, being cognizant of harm to local communities. And we're seeing that businesses are finding sustainable practices, in fact, give them a competitive advantage, either access to new markets, to consumers, or at the very least saving money through efficiencies or possibly even opportunities for monetization. So I'm going to turn it over to our speakers. We're going to start with Marcus. And after that, we'll hear from Stephanie, Andrew, and Greg. So with that, Marcus, please take it away.
Thank you, Caroline, for having me and inviting me to this very interesting panel discussion. I'm Marcus Ira. I'm a sustainability manager at Systembolaget. And for those who don't know, we are the monopoly retailer of alcoholic beverages in Sweden. We have more than 500 stores and additional more than 500 distribution centers all over Sweden. I would like to bring up some issues related to SMEs and the increased expectation and demands on companies to integrate sustainability in their business and in their daily work. And the first thing to bring up is the challenge. It's about the timing of when should you put the effort and do the transformation, do the work related to, say, sustainability. The short answer to that is the sooner the better. And that is because, making changes and adjustments today has a much greater output than waiting until you have to or you're forced to by the market or by new regulations. The cost is the same if you do the work today or tomorrow, but the profit and strategic output will be much higher if you don't wait. I think we all That is natural. And another thing that is very important in this context is that you really should include the work in the business strategy, because then the chances to increases that you create value for your company as well. It's much higher if you put it in your business strategy. Another issue I would like to bring up is the fact that the cultivation, I mean, the grape growers, is the phase in the value chain where a large part of environmental and climate impact lies. But it also at this phase of the value chain where conditions are the most challenging, I would say, in terms of, to some extent, the expertise in sustainability on the academic level is to some extent limited. And we also have less financial margins quite often, a less buffer to use for investments, limited access to modern IT-related tools. So those three, parameters are quite important. The answer to this challenge is that the expectation and demands from downstream, from producers or retailer, must be combined with support and assistance. I mean, a long-term collaboration with the producer is a way to build greater security and less risk when implementing changes at the cultivation level, because, I mean, new methods and changes are always a risk that need to be shared in the supply chain. That's my opinion. Another issue, as we are well aware of, with the Paris Agreement and the science-based targets, which many companies now are committed to, is that we depend on a certain amount, increasing amount of need for primary data from cultivation. And this part of the value chain is for certain areas like biodiversity, climate, of course, and water, perhaps the most important phase. So that is, again, a reason to assist and support the cultivation and the farmers. Another perspective, if I have the time to bring up, is that companies today, we are used to reporting financial data and quality data. That's fully natural. No one can argue against that. But environmental and climate data is a new field. Quite few are reporting in terms of percentage. And standards and practices are to some extent still lacking. So, much of the impact that occurs from businesses are free today. It has a price, of course, but no one is paying. And now we see the effects of it. And it's an enormous price. We are all aware of that. Just put on the news and you will get aware of it. And it's a tremendous, enormous impact on the ecosystems that we all depend on for our survival. So, these so-called, you said, Caroline, the externalities that must now be included in every company's reporting will become a matter of course in the future. I'm convinced about that. It's about building an acceptance habit and practice, and it will be seen, perceived as natural as reporting financial data. A good tool, just a few things more. A good tool, I would really like to bring, to point out the importance of the industry associations and the certification schemes and the people behind those, because they are providing a clear recipe today. In I would say that's my experience from all origins, a recipe and method for what you can do and how to get started with the work. So they are kind of a decreasing of threshold for small companies, how to get on and to start the work in terms of implementing sustainability. In summary, it's all about collaboration and the Sustainable Developing Goal number 17. I think that's the most important thing, to collaborate vertically and horizontally in our business. So that's my message today. Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you, Marcus. We're going to move on to Stephanie, but we're going to come back to so many of the great points that you made during a little bit more of a discussion. So Stephanie, give us a little bit of an introduction about the wineries that you're working with and some of the drivers for sustainability that are important to them.
Sure. Thank you. And hello, everybody. Great to be here. My name's Stephanie Dubin, and I'm the chair and interim CEO at Wine Victoria, where, as Marcus mentioned before, in terms of like peak bodies, we're a peak body that represents the state of Victoria in Australia. So that's over 3,000 growers, 650 producers, and it's an area of vines of 22,000 hectares. And we have a whole range of different size businesses. We have a lot of small wineries in Victoria, but we also are the home of Treasury Wine Estates, for instance, so, and Brown Brothers, or De Bortoli, some larger players in there as well. I feel that we're very fortunate in Australia that we have one singular industry-backed certification system, which is a Sustainable Wine Growers Australia certification, which you can get certified for either the vineyard or the winery or both. And there's been enormous growth in that just in the last year. There's been 48% increase in members. Currently, it's covering over 61,000 hectares across the country are certified for the Sustainable Wine Growers Program. But one of the biggest challenges, and what we're doing a lot, we had a workshop just running yesterday up in Mildura, which is the sort of heartland of Riverina space, where we'd supply quite a lot to the larger wine companies like Treasuries, like Accolade. We had an absolute capacity. We're supposed to cap the workshop for 20 people to get the certification paid for, and we, had nearly double that wanting to attend. And we've got a whole series of workshops that are going on around the state that we've sought government funding from. And one of the biggest challenges that we're seeing with wineries and growers getting that certification, a lot of the time the larger companies are not having some issues getting it, but it's the small to medium-sized businesses that just may not have the skills, the time, money to set aside to do it. And a lot of the time, what we've found is they just need a little bit of one-on-one additional support. So we're, again, through government funding, training up a whole host of Victorian-based consultants that can work with the wineries or growers to get that, just put their systems in place to get them started. But there's a lot of amazing, data that's part of the program that is, as well as getting the certification, an amazing amount of benchmarking that you can benchmark yourself against others in the region. Which obviously, even in the state that we're in Victoria, we have enormous climatic differences. We can get quite hot, temperate locations, and then down to very cool climate and high altitude as well. So there's a range of, even between the state of Victoria is a third of the size of France, I think, and the climatic differences between us in our state are quite significant. But also a huge part of that as well is, obviously where we are in Australia, climate change is critical, and availability of water in certain areas, making sure the varieties that we're growing are suitable for that climate change adaptation and what's going on with the water situation as well, which is really critical. So the interesting thing is a lot of the pressure that's coming in terms of getting that certification, like a lot of the small players might be saying, why do we have to do this? The consumer isn't really driving it. But where we're finding the biggest impacts coming from is we're very much being led by the European, a lot of the European retail chains that are seeing this particular certification that we have as the benchmark one for Australia. So it's starting to become a ticket to play. So there's reports that like Pernod Ricard, Accolade and Treasury, after this vintage, which we've had a very late vintage here, some people are still picking, we're just about to wrap up. Beyond that, if you don't have that certification, you're unlikely to be able to supply to those larger players. So it starts to put a massive impact on the market if you don't, you're starting to put up barriers for yourself. In terms of our own retail chains, they're certainly heading towards that as well, but we're not quite as progressed as things are in Europe. So we're very much being led from that front and very much being led from the larger players. One thing that I think, so for us really some of those, it's a great program that's in place, but some of those issues are really making sure that, the small to medium players, get that one-on-one support because of the challenges that they may face just in terms of the systems they need to put in place to get that certification. The other thing, it's a great program that we have, but where we are in Australia, obviously we're a long way from many of our export markets. We export over 60% of our wine that we produce. And, I have the figures from Australian Wine Research Institute that 68% of the carbon emissions, certainly from Australian brands, come from X winery. So come from your packaging and your logistics. So I think, and obviously where we are geographically located, very mindful of that and ways in which we need to look at innovation in packaging and also transportation over to export markets. So that's a bit of a encapsulating about where we're sort of at the market over here in Victoria and in Australia and some of the key drivers that are impacting our winemakers and growers.
That's great. Thank you, Stephanie. Andrew.
Thanks, Caroline. Good morning, everyone. My name's Andy Gale. I'm the Technical and Sustainability Director for Enotria Wine Cellars. We're one of the UK's leading premium wine and spirit distributors with access to multiple channels, on-trade, off-trade, hotels, events. We have a very large supply base with over 600 suppliers and 6,000 SKUs in our London warehouse. So we like to think we've got quite a unique position in the market and a level of visibility that not many people see, both up and downstream in the value chain. So we get to see the inputs and the outputs in terms of the ESG or sustainability agenda that many people don't see. It's interesting to listen to Marcus and Stephanie and about their what's important to them and what the drivers are for them. But one of the big ones for me is the move to regulation. So from a sustainability or ESG perspective, we're moving from what was once an ethical or a moral choice to something that's increasingly becoming compliance. So it's not going to be a choice effectively at the end of the day. There is going to be a regulatory requirement for reporting and for reduction. So, you know, post the Paris Climate Agreement, we've got countries in the EU that already have legally binding net zero commitments. I think Sweden and Germany are 2045. And the UK is aiming for 2050 for net zero. So, you know, this is coming and it's coming fast. So we're starting to see, I've talked locally, but I'm sure there's implications globally. We're starting to see national regulation that's driving historically larger companies to report on carbon and GHG emissions, but it's coming down the supply chain. So increasingly, SMEs are going to be required to report on their carbon and their GHG emissions and to publish what their plans are to mitigate or to reduce the impact they're having on the environment. There's legislation coming down the track on packaging and packaging waste, both in Europe and within the UK. We've got extended producer regulations in the next year, 18 months, which are going to have massive impacts on the packaging that is introduced into our market and the costs associated with it. So things like glass bottle weight is going to become really, really important if it wasn't already. We have plastic tax already in the UK. We've got deposit return schemes coming down the track in each of the devolved nations. So Scotland, England, Wales, Northern Ireland are all looking at different deposit return schemes, and there's going to be massive impacts on packaging formats and the way we distribute products within our markets. There's even a UK government paper in consultation at the moment on food data transparency. So DEFRA are starting to look at eco-reporting and what the requirements are going to be for businesses in the very near future. And there's massive amounts of EU regulations coming down the line on sustainability, but at every touch point in the supply chain. So you're talking about, you know, food contact materials. There's a focus on sustainability for those. There's directives on soil health. There's sustainable uses of pesticides and plant protection products. There's the biodiversity framework. So, you know, this is starting to touch every single point of the value chain. And it's moving from a choice to compliance, and it's moving from big global players to smaller businesses very, very rapidly. We all need to be aware of what the implications of that are.
Thank you, Andrew. And I'll just say that even though these regulations that you mentioned are coming from the UK and EU, it affects any country that wants to sell products in those country and member states' stream of commerce. So
yeah, and to Stephanie's point, you know, Europe is increasingly be seen as best practice for a lot of these areas. So what you see being developed there will inevitably be rolled out to other markets as well.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Lots to come back to on that. Greg, give us an overview of your experience in investing in agriculture and now in wine tech.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot, Caroline. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Greg Latour. I'm an investor in early stage startups in food tech, wine tech, and sustainability. And I've been doing that for a few years now, and I used to work in big corporate companies. I've invested in more than 20 startups so far, a lot in food tech and lately in wine tech. And I created my own investment fund a few months ago, specialized on wine tech from agriculture to consumers. The last two investments we've done, one of them will be in the panel this afternoon, is Deep Planet. And the other one is Juice Wines, which is premium wine in cans. So that's what I'm focusing on every single day of the week. I'm going to talk about three things. One is the ecosystem of investors in innovation and startups around wine tech. The second one is the major themes we are seeing in technology arriving and companies developing solutions around sustainability and wine. And the last one will be the drivers that I see from an investor, what's really moving the needle or trying to move the needle when it comes to wine tech and sustainability. But the first part is what I've noticed over the past few years is that when it comes to investing in technology and companies, wine tech and ag tech operate usually in an ecosystem which is composed of several actors. So there's not only one type of actors. There's obviously the winemakers, the wineries, and the distributors, which are most of the time the customers of those solutions and have a big role to play in trying those solutions and buying them after. Then you've got the authorities, whether they are regional, national, EU level, and their investment bodies. I think that's something which is very, very important in agriculture and wine across Europe. I mean, if we take Europe, but it's the same in other countries, is that you do have a lot of bodies that can provide expertise and money to try those new solutions around sustainability primarily. Then you've got all the banks who have got a vested interest, whether they are public banks or private banks, to support winemakers and wineries and startups into developing those solutions, growing companies, and being able to deliver the benefits to the winemakers. Then you got people like me, investors in technology and sustainability, whether we are public or private, same story. I mean, in many countries, you do have public investment bodies that have got, I mean, significant amount of money to inject into the economy of startups. Then you've got the research institutes and the universities, which are developing a lot of solutions and which are in some cases spun off after a while to create those new companies to provide those innovative solutions. So everybody operates in that system. There's a lot of sharing, which is something I noticed over the years. There's no fight to attract company, to invest in companies. There's a lot of sharing because everybody has a role to play in that ecosystem, whether you're going to be the company experimenting the new technical solution, whether you're a government body that needs to support the local economy and startups, or investor that are trying to find the best possible wine tech, ag tech company to invest in. So that's how I see the system operating now, and way more investment in ag tech than wine tech, because of course, I mean, wine tech is only a small part of the agriculture. But when you have a crop, the value of vines, of course, you can move to other crops after if your solution can be transferred. When I look at investment themes now that we are investigating or investing in on agriculture, there's a lot around precision agriculture with all the measurements to reduce the use of pesticide. To improve the water management system. So all the sensors, all the data, all the satellite imaging and AI that you can have to help the winemaker into making some decisions. That's very big and it's growing. Lots of companies there. Then we talked about data. I mean, data is all through the supply chain, as we all know, but it's broken down into several pieces. There's also a lot of interest at the moment on that on vineyard management systems and winery CRM to make sure that you can have two things. One is an automation around the data of producing the wine, whether you have sensors in your vineyard or and in your winery to capture automatically a lot of data that you can then report and you can then authenticate. And then also down the supply chain when you sell and distribute your wine to make automatic calculations of CO2 emission as an example and things like that. Talking about automation and tech, I mean, robotic and drones are big and it's still growing. There's a lot of money being poured into such companies at the moment to automate the work in the vineyard and in the winery, as well as reducing CO2 emission because most of them are battery operated. Packaging is big and growing. So alternative packaging, whether it's cans, cakes, pouches, and cardboard and paper bottle, even in the near future, lots of company there. And I will come back to that in a few minutes. So those are the big themes that I see. I mean, there's other, of course, like low alcohol wine or no alcohol wine is a big category at the moment, which is growing, but this is less around sustainability. The drivers that I see, I mean, to come back on what the group has said before, regulation, certification, and reporting is a big driver of innovation and a big driver of companies. Creating solutions to make sure that they ease the way of the winemakers and the distributors. If you look at the new regulation of the nutrition nutrition facts on the European Union applying to wine this year, I mean that suddenly I've seen at least five companies raising money recently, developing a solution to help the winemakers to do it as the simplest possible way. So that's one. Then the other driver is the public system support, which is the grants which are available at EU level, at national level, or local level to help small and medium companies to have access to innovation. So that's something important. Other drivers, availability of tech for the sustainability impact, the cost associated with it, the benefits you can have, whether it's, energy reduction or carbon storage and so on. One thing for me is education. That's a big driver. When you want people to switch packaging from bottle to cans, this is not something that comes very easily. It's very cultural. I need to educate people about the benefits of doing so. And then you've got the consumer pressure on the brands and on the company, on the producers, moving towards more sustainable product, whether it's because it's bio-farmed or whether it's packaged in a much more sustainable packaging like cans or bag-in-box. So those are the drivers I'm seeing.
That's a great summary of so many of the important drivers. What I'd like to do is I'd like to turn it over to Marcus and Andy to talk a little bit about how you all are able to help your suppliers and SMEs with some of these challenges. Stephanie, I want you to jump in and talk about what your SMEs need. And then Greg, how the smaller players can access some of this investment in technology. So Marcus and then Andy, let's hear from you all.
We try to support, I mean, it's a far way upstream to reach the growers. And we don't always have, even though we have mapped quite much of our supply chains today, and I'm quite proud of what we have done because we have such a diverse supply chains and related to quite many actors in different origins. We do not know exactly who the farmers are, but in to some extent we do. Nevertheless, I mean, long way to communicate directly with the farmers, even though we are trying to do it to some extent. So we think, and we have identified again, the certification schemes to be kind of a connection for us to promote sustainable vineyard practices, for example. And also related, of course, to the production of wine, I mean, the producers of wine. So we think the certification schemes, we have done a work now for quite many years to analyze all the certification schemes, not all, but the most relevant ones for different markets, in order to systemize how we can use these certifications with communication with customers, in our own risk analysis of the whole assortment, and also in the tender process. And that's a way to transfer the diversity between these certification schemes so that we can use it in a systematic way. And again, I think because we are quite much focused on these certification schemes, we do have a direct dialogue with most of these, I mean, companies and organizations behind these certification schemes in order to get them to harmonize more and talk more to each other, and to step by step, hopefully in the future, we will have a maybe not one system with one name, but maybe different names, but with more harmonized content in the certification schemes. And these certifications, as I said before, they are doing a tremendous, fantastic work in terms of decreasing the threshold for small and medium size and big companies to implement the best practices in terms of vineyard practices and how to work with sustainability in the winery. So that is, I don't know if that is an answer to your question, but I think that is what we have identified as the most, at this moment, I would say, the most efficient way to reach up the full supply chain. Yeah.
Andrew, over to you.
Yeah. What we see, Marcus and his team are well advanced in comparison to a lot of companies and a lot of retailers. So, you know, they've got established targets and schemes. What we're seeing is a lot of retailers coming to the market with sustainability and ESG targets that they're applying across multiple categories and not just wine. So it's a generic approach, not a wine specific approach. And quite often this means these are not always aligned with each other or with the category. So you've got different standards, different schemes, different codes of practice, different portals that producers have to try to get to grips with and to understand the implications of compliance or non-compliance, to be honest. These things are often outsourced with cost implications. It basically means that one size doesn't fit all within the industry. So you got, to Steph's point, you've got big branded wine suppliers who, you know, have got this sewn up. They've got the resources. They've got the people to do all this reporting. But you've got small family businesses that just don't really know how to start. So I think you know, the lack of resource, lack of skill, lack of knowledge on the subject is really important. So what we try to do is, to Marcus's point and also to Greg's point, is to try and enable that collaboration throughout the value chain, to make sure that we're sharing knowledge and to try and drive our producers towards sets of common aligned sustainability goals. So we're taking best practice from different retailers across each of the ESG pillars and trying to drive that within our supply base and say, this is what we're seeing as best practice from all of our customers, and this is where we suggest you develop and focus your efforts. What I'd really love to see, and the other guys have touched upon it, is this harmonization of standards. So we've got just too many local, regional, national, global environmental standards that people are being asked to work on, and it's just too confusing for everybody. So I think it's really important the work that SWR are doing to try and work on this commonality. And if I was to put it simply, what we try to do is provide direction, clarity, and simplification. And any support that we can get from SWR to enable our suppliers to focus their efforts, I think, is money and time well spent. You know, we talked about regulation and reporting. There's we're going to have to come up with simpler ways of sharing data capture solutions and templates that smaller wineries and wine producers can use, because at the moment the information they're being asked for is just overwhelming. You know, these guys are not in a position to do life cycle analysis or carbon footprinting for every single one of their products, you know, just from a cost perspective more than anything else. But from a data perspective, it really is overwhelming. So we need to find easier ways of capturing data and reporting on it. But for us, it's simplification is what we try to do, is give our producers direction based on the challenges we're receiving from our customers and our retailers.
Yeah, great. And to your point about the concern of the current disharmonization of standards, you know, query whether they encapsulate the compliance metrics or whether they just are best management practices, which is better than nothing. But Stephanie, we want to hear from you. How does that resonate with the groups that you work with? And by the way, how did you get a 48% increase in your members signing up for the certification? And we've got about 2 minutes left. I want to do a wrap up of the drivers from each of you.
I think that it's probably got a 48% increase just because there has been an enormous momentum going on here in Australia, and we're trying to build a bit of fear of missing out for those that you know, in terms of the business, you know, the wineries that I deal with. But I totally agree, like what Andrew was saying in terms of simplification. That's why I'm quite relieved in Australia when I look at some other countries that we have one industry certified benchmark, and I agree, a global one would be fantastic. I think some of the challenges too is for some of the smaller players, they sort of understand that B2B side of things, the business to business side, which is where the biggest drivers that we're feeling the impact from are coming. But they're sort of like, what is it for me? The consumer doesn't care. We get a lot of those sort of stories. So I think there could be benefits in terms of along the supply chain, sort of where businesses can be communicating about, you know, why it's important to the geese of their business and what it means to have your brand, you know, on the shelves at like Systembolaget. You know, we have these, you know, exceptionally high standards, and you should be proud to be able to have your product, you know, being ranged there because we have such high standards, and this is where, you know, and you know, only brands that have those certifications. So there's a little bit of work to be done on that. That sort of understanding too about what it means to consumers. I'm on board with what it means with consumers, but for a lot of sometimes the smaller wineries, that's a bit of pushback that we get.
Yeah. All right. Well, seeing as we have 1 minute left, I'd like to go around and just ask Marcus, then Andy, then Stephanie, then Greg, just reiterate the top three drivers for sustainability.
Okay, three. that's hard. I would say that, I mean, customer demands, political instruments, regulations, innovations, investor demands, and the interaction between them. That is kind of the ecosystem that we need to build on. But most important of all is the commitment on the company level, in each company. I mean, the belief of doing the right things and believe that sustainable companies will be the best adapted to future challenges. That's my
Andy?
I can't ignore the regulatory drivers. They're coming down the track for all of us, and they can't be ignored. Well, they can be ignored, but they get very expensive, as you'll know, Caroline. The retailer customer drivers are really important for us and for our producers. But the one that can't be ignored at the moment is the economic circumstances as well. It was touched on in one of the previous sessions. You know, how do you make sustainability profitable? You know, it's becoming a commercial imperative for everybody throughout the supply chain. And, you know, it's one that impacts everybody.
Yeah. Stephanie, and then we'll finish up with Greg.
I think commitment's a really important one. And also, you know, what's been discussed as well, it's not just sort of, you know, certification that's good to have. It's really now best practice and what businesses need to have. It's sort of just part of, you know, part of the business moving forward in terms of what you need with your, you know, to tool yourself up to sell.
Yeah, it's a new world. Okay. And finally, Greg.
Yeah, I think, I mean, regulation clearly drives a lot of behaviors and innovation. For me, it's availability of tech and sustainable tech is very key also to do those changes. And the last one is the consumer perception and education on some of the changes.
Wish we had more time. What a fantastic panel. Thank you all so much.